Let's kick off a podcast. You ready?
No.
You're not ready? Are you ready?
Whatever, Steve.
It's all silicon this week, Matt. Well, silicon technology. We're going deep. We're going deep in the weeds. A little later in this episode, we're going to have the president of the PCI SIG, the guys who define our PCIe standard. Last month, they put out the PCI 6.0 specification, which doubles the performance of PCIe 5, which doubled the performance of PCIe 4.
Right.
So we'll talk about that in a minute. Before we get there, though, the past week, we've started seeing earnings across the tech industry, and you and I are big chip heads. So here's what I saw. Intel and AMD both announced last week their best quarters, respectively, ever. AMD killed it. They were up 68% year over year. That's a big bump. 16.4 billion top line revenue. Gross margins were 48%. They're saying that's up 370 basis points. Not surprising, right? Because margin is driven by server, and their server business killed it on their slides. I'm just going to hit the high points and we can talk about it. So they bury server in a group with embedded and semi-custom, which I think is where all the PlayStation stuff lives, right?
Yeah, gaming consoles. And then, I don't think their embedded business is as strong, but EESC is, the vast majority of it is tied up with server and gaming consoles.
Yeah. So they don't break out enterprise specifically, although Lisa Su did say something in the transcript, and I'll talk about that. But that segment, enterprise, embedded, and semi-custom, was $2.2 billion, up 75% year over year, up 17% quarter over quarter. They called out on the slide that that's driven by higher EPYC.
Yeah.
Well, higher EPYC and semi-custom. So again, last year was also a big year for game consoles. But what Lisa said, cloud was way up.
Yeah.
She said, hang on, I have it here. I don't have it here. I had it here. I lost it. Never mind. I'll cut that part out. But she also said, and I'm going to ask you about these technologies also, is she said in the earnings call, actually, I'm not going to go there yet. So what do you think of those numbers? Is this all EPYC?
I think it's, I think this quarter was the combination, or, the numbers were a combination of, they definitely had a strong impact from gaming, but I think it's largely EPYC. I think they had a very strong quarter for EPYC and year for EPYC. You mentioned it, huge in cloud, but enterprise adoption is really starting to take off as well.
Yeah, we're starting to see the servers with the latest parts.
Yeah. It's, I don't know what their market share is in server right now. I gave some predictions a couple of years ago, and I think I was maybe a year ahead, but they're strong. And it's funny because I know Intel had a strong quarter as well, and we'll get to that, but their cloud business was down a little bit. And I think AMD is eating into their cloud business pretty significantly. And that's a big deal because, people think, you're selling into cloud and it's a lower margin, but that's not the case. A lot of this is very tailored silicon, and it comes with higher margin, and it drives, and it's also very large volume.
And these are massive chips are deploying in the cloud, and AMD did say that right now in preview are their fourth gen EPYC processor, Genoa, GA, is that what they say now? GA later in 2022, but has 96 Zen 4 cores and next gen memory. And that is specifically targeted to hyperscalers, right? You can run a lot of instances on something with 96 cores.
That's right.
And then Bergamo is coming first half of 2023, and that ups the core count to 128.
Yep.
Specifically targeted to cloud and cloud native workloads.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And, I feel like AMD is, it definitely not only does it have a tailwind, I mean, the wind is at its back. It is, mm-hmm. it is gaining in velocity considerably. You know, what's almost more interesting to me on this whole equation or this whole story is kind of what the impact to Intel is. You know, this isn't the you know, the rising tide floats all boats. These gains are coming at the expense of Intel.
And they absolutely are. And you see this in the, I mean, one of the things that came up in the Intel earnings was, you know, their cloud business was not stellar in fourth quarter, whereas AMD's was. And if you go and look at the data, Canalys released their report last week and Lifter Insights tracks these things, which is, we saw a huge influx of configurations based on, the latest EPYC. We did not see a corresponding spike in Intel.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Which tells you something, right? And I think it was Gelsinger talked about, you know, the battle between AMD and Intel and this data center being like a knife fight in a phone booth. And actually don't think it's quite that even right now. I think AMD is eating Intel's lunch, and I haven't seen really much of a response from Intel yet.
No, but you will. The other thing before we jump over to Intel that Lisa brought up on the call, which I thought was interesting. First let me say the other news out of last week was Xilinx. Well, AMD is in the process of acquiring Xilinx, and they've cleared their last regulatory hurdle. So China has given provisional approval, right, for this to move forward.
Yep.
And that's a $1 billion business. A lot of that is data center. Again, looking at what the hyperscalers are doing, the public cloud guys anyway. We've seen a shift in configurations based on Intel FPGAs for kind of accelerated compute to Xilinx over the past 18 months. Lisa Su said in the earnings call that that she sees Xilinx as a pull into edge, into communications, into all these places where FPGAs play, but Intel processors don't usually, right? And once Xilinx, I think, is part of their portfolio, that gives them huge opportunity to do bundling and things like that to kind of push into these markets. I think that's also a further thing for data center because we're seeing FPGAs deployed for a lot of accelerated compute.
I'll be curious to see how that plays out. I mean, is there a, you know, I heard her say that, and I've heard other folks at AMD kind of inferred in the past, and I'm a little bit curious about that. Is if you know. Are you telling me that there's something, some better together story you're going to create?
Maybe it's not better together technologically. Maybe it's better together financially.
Synergistically. Yeah. Well, I would hope it's that. I hope they don't go down the path of, you know, I hope they don't Intelize it, which is, you know, let's make this, you know, specific to my technology only. I think that actually works against them, not for them. And I can't imagine they would do that. And anyway.
But, you know, and again, the proof's going to be in the pudding. If you look at how Xilinx sells into edge today, certainly the edge that AMD wants to play in, it's a lot of add-in card stuff, right? It's not on motherboards. You know, that becomes much harder, I think, to leverage into system designs.
For existing, but, you know, new
systems. Existing, right. Yep. But we still don't know what's going to happen, right? And, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things happening with accelerated compute and most of that is still in the add-in card business, but you know it makes sense that that's going to fold in.
I'll be curious to see. You know, as 2022 exits, I would be so excited to see what the market share looks like for AMD versus Intel in the data center.
The problem is there's one analyst that counts that, and I think they publish it once a year. So. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see it. You know, last year's, I forget the number, but it was on the order of 16%, 17%, which is their biggest number ever.
Yeah.
Intel may be less interesting to talk about. They're chugging along. They had their best quarter ever, largely driven by client though, not server. Their client group, where am I at? I take that back. Their data center group was up 20% year over year. They did $7.3 billion.
Where were they strong? What sectors were they strong in?
They were strongest in enterprise and government. Their cloud segment shrank by 5%, which says something. This is where we saw it. Their cloud business shrank by 5%, whereas AMD's was in double digits.
See, to me, cloud is the leading indicator of where, where they're going, any company's going. And we saw it with Opteron. You know, AMD was very successful with Opteron and cloud. And when we were there, and the folks we started to lose first were, it was Google, right? I couldn't say it at the time, but it was Google. And it was Microsoft. And those were, you know, and that's where everything fell out after the cloud. They're leading indicators for good and for bad. And that's why I'm a little bit kind of curious about what happens with Intel.
So one of the other things that first I've noticed, so on Intel's earnings slides, they break out within DCG, they break out cloud, they break out enterprise and government. From a directional perspective, they don't tell us what the revenue is. And then they break out communications, right? And this was the first time I think Lisa's talked about communications as a target. So, you know, I think they're aligning certainly with what Intel, the way Intel's thinking about the data center market. So enough about processors. PCIe 6 is coming up, and rather than you and I talking about it, let's jump over. We're very fortunate to have Al Yanes, who is the president of the PCI SIG. He's been president of the PCI SIG since 2003 and chairman since 2008. It's not his full-time job. He's a distinguished engineer at IBM in their systems business. So let's just jump over and hear all the goodness that's going to be PCIe 6. So we'd like to welcome PCI SIG President Al Yanes, who's also a distinguished engineer at IBM. Al, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Hey, so let's jump right in. The PCI SIG, this was big news across the tech press in January, released the spec for PCIe 6. What is PCIe 6? What's new and different?
At the high level, we doubled the data rate. So we've doubled the performance from 5.0 to now essentially 64 gigabit transfers per second. And if you use a by 16 PCI Express connection, you can achieve 256 gigabytes per second of total bandwidth. PCI Express is a full duplex, so you can send and receive simultaneously. So yeah, I mean, in 2.5 years, Steve, we've been able to double the data rate for ourselves and for the members in the industry.
So beyond just doubling the data rate, are there other challenges that the new spec addresses?
Well, yeah. So one of the key things that we did, and it's a little bit too revolutionary for us, was we went to a PAM4 signaling, and that helped us achieve the 64 gigatransfers per second. So previously we were using NRZ. Electrical communication.
Right.
So PAM4 has been used by Ethernet and some other industry interfaces. So we leveraged some of that to achieve our data rates. We also went to a what we call FLIT mode, flow control unit, where we do a fixed packet size. And this just helped us achieve simplicity and achieve our reliability, if you will. So we're always sending now 236 bytes of payload, you know, followed by 20 bytes of additional information. And this helps us achieve our bit error rates, and it also helps us achieve some of the flow control information and reduces our encoding. We were before 128-bit, 130-bit encoding. Now with the fixed packet size, we can go back to a 1B. So no encoding overhead associated with the PCI Express 6.0.
Okay, yeah, because you know the inside of a server PC is very electrically noisy, and 128 gigabytes over copper, that's fast, right? And so the new PAM4 and the things you've talked about help address that, help keep.
Yeah, and with PAM4, we also went to a forward error corrector code that helped us achieve some of the latency, because that was a big concern with PAM4 is the latency. And we're using the replay buffer mechanism that we have in place already, leveraging that, have a higher CRC value to detect any kind of bit errors. So yeah, this all kind of, you know, meshed together to help us achieve our high bandwidth.
So is this just help me relate it to what I, you know, to what's already in my data center? Is this a drop-in replacement for PCIe 5 or PCIe 4, or does it open the door to new system designs?
Yeah, that's a good question. We maintain our legacy, which is or one of our recipes of success, which is backward compatibility. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the past and through all six generations, we've been able to have a future PCI Express solution plug into a previous motherboard or vice versa. And this allows the motherboard vendors to develop their motherboards independent of the add-in cards. So that's going to facilitate sort of the adoption. So we've seen that, and we've continued to use that as an important ingredient of, for our members to launch their solutions so they can, independent of the motherboard, if they're an add-in card, or if they're a motherboard, they can, independent of the add-in card, build their systems together.
So you talk about add-in cards, and I think about the add-in cards that live in a typical server, even a gaming PC, right? And apart from GPU, I can't think of a lot of cards that can take advantage of that kind of bandwidth. Is this to help a higher performance class of add-in cards, or does this enable me to put maybe more I/O cards and keep those fully saturated? Kind of question.
Yeah, that's another good question. So some of the, like you mentioned, we're thinking 800 gig Ethernet, mm-hmm. which is one of the networking cards that's coming down the road. We'll need this kind of bandwidth. We're also looking at some of the accelerators, some of the machine learning, some of the AI solutions. So those that really need to consume data and process data and, share the data very fast. So yeah, not everybody needs this kind of bandwidth, but there are going to be applications that are going to require it or need it.
Sure.
And the other angle that we've seen, like you just mentioned, right? Let's say we have a bunch of PCIe 5.0 solutions. Well, how can PCI Express 6.0 help? Well, maybe those PCIe 5.0 solutions are plugged into a switch. And the switch is only communicating PCIe 5.0 to the root complex. So by doubling the bandwidth at the root complex level, you double the ability to bandwidth to all those 5.0 solutions that are currently underneath that switch. So there's lots of places where you can intercept this technology on your system and improve performance. Some other techniques that we've seen from our members is, let's say I have a by four solution and IO is expensive for my product or my part or for routing. You can go from a PCIe 5.0 by four solution to a PCIe 6.0 by two solution, cut your IO pins in half, your routing in half, and still achieve the same kind of bandwidth. So there's some cost plays associated with the higher bandwidth. Mm-hmm. And there's some different options. So we put a matrix together that shows the sort of the six generations of speeds now that we have and the five different, what we call feeds by ones, by two, by four, by eight, and by 16. So 30 different permutations that, lead to 10 unique bandwidth profiles. It's pretty cool.
I'm looking at that chart right now. So just, again, big dummy here. I'm a software guy. When you say by two, by four, by eight, these are the number of PCI Express lanes, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, here's my question too, because again, I am looking at the slide as you're talking. I'm an IT guy and I'm used to thinking in bandwidth numbers and things of that sort. When I read about the PCIe spec and the news coverage around it, you talk in terms of giga transfers. Can you help me as we go and look at this collateral? How does giga transfers relate to bandwidth and how should I do that math in my head?
Yeah. The giga transfers, we used to say gigahertz before and people didn't like that. So we switched to giga transfers per second. So yeah, it's you multiply the gigatransfers per second by the width, and then what we're showing in our charts, like I mentioned before, it's a full duplex So you, it's a total bandwidth because you can send and receive it simultaneously. Remember that PCIe 1.0 and 2.0 was the 8-bit, 10-bit encoding.
Mm-hmm.
And then the, we had the 128-bit, 130-bit encoding for 3.0 through 5.0.
So we like to focus in. I mean, hero numbers are always great and generate the headlines around the extreme levels of performance. But power efficiency, I think, has also become, you know, a critical piece of every system design. Does that impact PCIe 6? Does that contribute at all to the conversation?
Well, two comments on power. And yes, power is a, an important thing. One is the less lanes at the same bandwidth is usually more power efficient. So a PCIe 6.0 by 2 is going to be more efficient than a PCIe 5.0 by 4. They both achieve, you know, the same bandwidth, but the having less lanes and having the less serial deserializers on the chip tends to be more power friendly. And the other item was that we have done some power sort of improvements on 6.0 where you can sort of target a power number and to help you maybe not use all the lanes. Let's say you have a by 8 solution and in certain cases you only want to achieve a certain power requirement. You can maybe turn off some of the lanes to help you achieve your numbers.
Okay. And so I'm ready. And I know you're an engineer, not a product guy. I'm already being briefed by some chip companies and, you know, storage controllers and the like around their PCIe 6 implementations. But this is not something that we can go out and buy this year, right? This is going to, when's this going to hit? I'm not going to put you on the spot because I know you don't build products, but generally speaking, right? What does the adoption curve look like from the time you released a spec in January of 2022? When are we going to start to see this in servers?
Yeah, so the rule of thumb that we've used is 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
And I think that will play in this case because of the fact that, as you mentioned, we're sort of ahead of the industry. And that's kind of as a standards organization, you want to be. You want to have the specification ahead of the curve, sure, if you will, to allow your members to pick and choose which technology they want to plan for, intercept, when do they want to intercept it. So yeah, the rule of thumb we've used is 12 to 18 months before you see products. Now, that being said, I wouldn't be surprised if at our developers conference in June, we're going to see folks demoing and, you know, proof of concept demonstrations of PCI Express 6.0.
So you mentioned your members a couple of times, and let's circle back. So you're president of the PCI SIG. Just kind of give us what's the elevator pitch? Who's the PCI SIG and how do you operate?
Yeah, so we're happy to say that we're at a 900 member organization. And that 900 member is one of our high from like the last 12 years. So we've seen a large increase in our membership. We're unique in the sense that we're a flat organization, flat member fee, and low cost entry. So it's only $4,000 to be a member of the organization. So that tends to be very friendly to small companies and, you know, small players in the industry. And the fact that we are a flat membership sort of puts everybody in an equal playing field.
Yeah.
Our board of directors, there's elections every year. Nobody is sort of given a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. You have to be elected, and the election process is every year. Our IP policy is also friendly from an industry perspective. It's a RAND policy, reciprocal and non-discriminatory IP policy. So we have about 10 different work groups, you know, within the organization. They tend to meet weekly. Our voting is a majority vote. We follow, you know, Robert's Rules of Order. It's a very healthy environment. And I will say, you know, we delivered this specification during, you know, these tough times.
Sure.
Where folks couldn't, you know, really do a lot of meeting and face to face. So, very, very excited about the high level of membership. And if I may add, Steve, mm-hmm. one of the increases we've seen in one of our strategic directions is automotive industry. We've seen a large interest in the automotive industry, and we believe that we can play a bigger role and increase PCI Express adoption in the automotive industry. So we have a new work group that we formed, and we're exploring, you know, what else we can do to the specification to facilitate the usage in the automotive space.
You go to a lot of technical conferences, and if you look over the past, you know, 3 to 5 years, automotive, it's, you know, increasingly present. It's gone from something that was deeply embedded and proprietary to there's a lot of open systems looking things happening in your car right now. So,
and the need for speed and, you know, sharing of information and processing information, that's when we tend to play well. And, you know, we've been around for 30 years, and in June is our 30 year anniversary, you know, from the days of PCI, if you remember those days, you know, 32-bit, 30 megahertz. You know, we've got a lot of infrastructure, got a lot of lines of code. People are very familiar with our programming model and how PCI Express works, and, you know, the discovery of PCI Express solutions. You know, we're also focusing now on PCI Express cables, which also plays a role in the automotive space.
Yeah.
Trying to develop PCI Express cables in a standard that will facilitate PCIe 5.0 and also PCIe 6.0.
I just want to kind of bring this back to, you know, IT and how IT benefits from all the great work you do. So, you know, the vast majority of the servers out there today are plumbed for PCIe 4. Right. Not PCIe 5, but 4. So, and you're advancing PCIe 6 spec, which has a lot of great benefit to it. So if I have an HPE server, a Dell server, a Lenovo server that's plumbed for PCIe 4, understanding backward compatibility, what are the benefits I as an IT person can recognize from a PCIe 6 device that's running in a server that is not designed to support the bandwidth of PCIe 6. What are there other benefits that it brings to me as an IT person?
Yeah, it will be hard, Matt, because somebody, you know, it would be the PCIe 6.0 solution, maybe, you know, since it's a new adapter, it has some additional benefits just based on the new technology node, because, you know, obviously a PCIe 6.0 solution is going to probably most likely be in a new technology node. And by being a new technology node, you're going to have a lower power profile leveraging the new technology node. Potentially you're going to have a new chip, you know, with the new architecture, with new enhancements. So maybe just the nature of the development, but not necessarily. You know, you'll be running, like you mentioned, you'll be running PCIe 4.0 speeds. So there won't be an advantage from that perspective. Now, if you could replace the switch and run PCIe 6.0 to the adapters and still run PCIe 4.0 to the root complex, maybe you can take advantage of some efficiencies and some bandwidth improvements there. To sustain that, sort of the pipe to the root complex. But yeah, if the only one thing changes, whether, you know, on the add-in card side, yes, you probably are not going to see it. I mentioned earlier, though, you could envision a motherboard that does do a PCIe 6.0 switch. And let's say they had a 5.0 or PCIe 4.0 switch. And then those kind of solutions, you will see an improvement because let's say you continue to have only PCIe 4.0 adapters. And by just replacing that switch and making that bigger, fatter pipe of bandwidth to the root complex, you can achieve more bandwidth across those adapters that are connected on the downstream ports. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. Yeah. For the, you know, for the folks who I would imagine are, you know, huge beneficiaries of all of this additional bandwidth. I think of, you know, your high performance computing workloads.
Correct.
Workloads. You know, are you projecting beyond, you know, is there some kind of forecast or projection that says, you know, if you go to a PCIe 6 design and implementation for, you know, insert your high performance workload here, you know, weather modeling, whatever, you can expect, because of the additional bandwidth, you can expect, you know, on a, you know, standard Intel or AMD based platform, X percent better performance, some kind of measurement of, you know, what the real world benefit would be for organizations?
Yeah, that's a tough question. Somebody will have to sit down and do the math. We used to say, all roads lead to memory. So, you know, everything goes to memory eventually. Is your memory taking advantage? Is your memory higher bandwidth? You know, is sort of like everything needs to fully exploit the additional bandwidth. You need the infrastructure to improve, right? So the memory access has to be faster, because if I'm just going to the root complex really fast and then everything goes the same data rate to memory, then, you know, how much improvement am I really making? It'll be less.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be part of an infrastructure play. And we talked about, you know, you said copper, you know, a lot of these 6.0 solutions requires the new Megtron technology, which is a little more expensive. So maybe you don't have all your slots be PCIe 6.0. Maybe your M.2 solutions are, you know, that are by 2 currently. Maybe they go to by 1 to save costs, as I mentioned before, in routing. So to fully exploit it, though, we're all in this together. We all have to, you know, and we're anticipating that these motherboards are going to need the speed. They're going to improve the speed. They're going to use the latest DDR technology of the time. You know, the processors are going to go faster. Their CPU architecture is going to be, you know, more sophisticated. So it all has to, you know, sort of fit.
Hey, so just to kind of wrap this up, have we solved all of our interconnect problems? What's next for the PCI SIG? Where are you guys heading?
Well, we'll see, right? you know, we're taking a little bit of a rest here, and based on the announcement and sure. the achievement, and we'll see what these what our work groups come up with. Yeah, we've always said, or in the past, people have said, "Oh, copper is gonna, you know, we're not gonna be able to achieve these rates," and here we are achieving these rates on copper. So. I wouldn't be surprised if we can do another doubling again, but we'll let the smart folks in the electrical work group ponder those questions.
So PCIe 7 will be in about 24 months. Is that your cadence?
2.5 years is what we've done. From 4.0 to 5.0 and from 5.0 to 6.0. I'll be ecstatic if we can do that again. We have that other chart, Steve, that we've shown that we've been averaging doubling the bandwidth on average over the last, you know, 30 years, every 3 years. So 2.5 is a nice sweet spot to be below the trend and below the average. And that'd be kudos for us if we can achieve that again.
Excellent. Well, we'll be paying attention. Hey, Al, thanks very much for coming on. I mean, I know this is a fairly technical topic, but I think you did a great job of explaining it to us. So thanks. Thanks again for joining.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Matt.
So, Matt, I can't wait for PCIe 6. I'm still waiting on PCIe 5. It's a long path, right, to get from specification to system.
Yep.
Right? And it's a little bit of a crawl, walk, run. You have to enable a whole ecosystem. right? The processors have to support it, but so do all the adapters, right? The PCI bridges, the storage controllers, the network controllers. And I know I've been briefed. I've started to see some PCI 6 stuff from the likes of, I don't remember what's NDA, what's not, but from some of the storage controller guys for sure.
I really want to see it talked about from the systems vendors. Because if it ain't on the motherboard.
It won't be on a motherboard until, and you tell me, you're the CPU guy, the next generation of EPYC and the next generation of Xeon, which are both, are those this year? That'll be next year before we see the ones with PCI 6.
Correct. Yeah. It'll be 2023. Yep.
Yeah. So we're really, you're not going to see this in our systems until back half of 2023 at the earliest, which is fine, right? We know where we're going. We know what we can plan for. I think most of us are still waiting on our Ice Lake systems with PCIe 5. So anyway, we've talked enough. Let's end this podcast.